Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership. We unlock the power of organizations and teams to overcome tough challenges, seize new opportunities, and turn bold ideas into real-world results through strategic planning, retreats, and team workshops. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Today, we have one of San Diego's visionary leaders, one who is redefining success by aligning profit with purpose. Today, we're diving into a conversation that's all about investing money with meaning. Sebastian Harris, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Jeff. Thanks for your time.
Our guest, Seb Harris, is a serial entrepreneur and the driving force behind the Sandbox Fund, a venture capital firm that's not just funding the future, but shaping it with intention. At the Sandbox Fund, they're empowering founders to scale their business without compromising on what matters most, family, faith, and the fabric of our communities. Seb has had a successful entrepreneurial journey from co-founding and scaling Public Square to a $350 million IPO to leading transformative growth at Solstrata, Inc. Sebastian's journey is a testament of the power of purpose-driven leadership. So if you're ready to explore how capital can be a catalyst for conscious change, this is the podcast for you. Seb, you ready to rock and roll?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Well, let's kick this off with the big why. What's the story behind why you're leading the way you're leading?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's kind of a fun story. Originally from New Zealand, born in Australia, grew up in New Zealand, moved to the U.S. about 10-ish years ago, followed an American girl and didn't look back.
Chasing
the American girls, blonde American girls. You know, we didn't get a lot of those in New Zealand. So I found my ticket and off we went. And yeah, we kind of been involved in a lot of different things. And one of them, we got involved in a nonprofit over in the Middle East that was working to try and bring prosperity towards peace was kind of the momentum. So what would, you know, asking the question, what does it look like to bring people of different geopolitical religious backgrounds together to do business together and to form meaningful business relationships that could actually transform the way culture is happening over there and actually potentially create some peaceful dynamics if there was a intercommingling of business relationships. So trying to bring these values of prosperity, capitalism, consciously thinking through these things together to really drive business success. Up until that point, I'd mostly been in the nonprofit world until we went and were participating in this momentum that was happening over in the Middle East. And so I kind of had a moment where I was like, you know what? Business is actually transformational in a lot of different ways if we leverage it in the right ways, because it can bring the significance of for-profit capital into movements that actually shift and shape culture, or even, you know, in the Middle East, actually start to create a potential pathway towards geopolitical peace, you know? And so that was kind of a conversation that blew my mind of—
And a light bulb went on, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly like that. The question was, well, what does that look like in First World, in America, in, you know, in the West? Like, how do we actually leverage business and the capital that goes with business, not just to be really successful and use the, like a tithe or something off the top to give into really cool projects. But what if the mission of the business was actually integratedly moving towards a culture shifting moment? You know, what would that look like was really the question that kind of came up. And so I think, you know, over the last 10 years, I've been exploring that question of like, how do you use business to solve problems that real people have that could actually create a different change in culture or society that people are looking to see? So it kind of came from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a very lofty thing. I mean, that's kind of what conscious capital is all about, that, you know, businesses have a higher purpose than just making money, right?
I mean, exactly.
And yeah. Usually if you talk to almost any owner, you say, what's the backstory? Why did you start this business? There's always a bigger story. They were trying to solve some other problem, not just like, oh, I'm just trying to make money here. But it gets lost often in translation.
You know? It can so, do.
Yeah, yeah, very quickly, yeah. Especially as businesses start to grow.
Yeah.
Profit starts to become the king. Absolutely. Well, perfect, perfect. So wait a minute, you're not from here?
No, I'm not.
What a great story.
Yeah, no, so my parents were traveling nurses together in Australia. They're Kiwis, New Zealanders originally. And my mom is a researcher and innovator. And what she built while we were in high school, you know, she's got three boys, full-time job, and doing her PhD, trying to figure this whole thing out in neonatal hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar in babies. So what she ended up doing was she created this really simple, really cheap, effective treatment for hypoglycemia in infants in the NICU, so that when they were sick, they could actually still breastfeed with the mom, which is super important for the development process of the baby. And so that was the environment I grew up on my mom's side. And then my dad's side, he
grew up. The entrepreneurial mom going there.
Amazing, amazing. And then my dad ended up being a healthcare executive. So he had all the operations, you know, logistics, facility, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Blocking and tackling side of things.
Exactly. So that was the environment I grew up in my household. So
couldn't help you be successful.
Couldn't help but be an entrepreneur and try to build systems, you know? So it's just kind of in the DNA, atmosphere.
Yeah,
which is really cool. So, you know, mid 2015-ish, met my now wife, Claire, and we were part of a Christian ministry in New Zealand together. She had come over to help be a part of that. And then that's how we met. And then all of one thing led to another. And now we're here in the U.S. And, you know, after a little bit, we spent some time in Alabama, which was kind of
interesting place to start.
Interesting place to start, you know, very different than California. But none of the Southern gentlemen understood my accent. I had a thicker New Zealand accent at that point. So I had to.
You're a foreigner.
I was, you know.
Really a foreigner.
I know. And, you know, culturally in Alabama, you stick out, you know, as somebody with a different accent down there. And so I had to strategically adjust my accent over time. So that's why sometimes I introduce myself as Sebastian, because the Southern men couldn't understand Sib. You know, I'd get Sip or Sib, or, you know, it was a lot. So yeah, but yeah, back in California, land of the free, you know.
I have a similar story. I went the other way though. I was living in Ohio as a kid and my dad took a job with General Motors. So we had to move to Atlanta.
Okay.
And so, I mean, this was many, many years ago and they were still fighting the Civil War down there. I got down there and I didn't know what a Yankee or rebel even was, but being a Yankee was not a good thing. So I didn't want to be a Yankee. So
yeah.
I very quickly got a Southern accent.
Yeah,
I understand. I blended right in really quickly. Yep. Yep. It's a matter of survival at some level.
Certainly.
You don't want to stand out. That's exactly. For sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background here. I mean, you've done some pretty amazing entrepreneurial things here, starting businesses that have been highly successful. Maybe just tell us a little about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, after kind of that moment with the light bulb going off, started a consulting company, really helping faith-based entrepreneurs really get systems and structures into nonprofits, into businesses and things like that. That was the, you know, the work I was mostly doing in the nonprofit world was operations, system building, HR, you know, all the detail kind of stuff to get things moving, and then eventually moved into more
fixing that fantasy that somehow nonprofits don't run like for-profit companies.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we started doing that, which is really great. And then jumped into another business with a buddy of mine from New Zealand, you know, helping Christian entrepreneurs create income streams, you know, people who are on the mission field specifically who are relying totally on donations, you know, what were some potential income streams to help develop them towards thinking more holistically about income generation in their life, and then hopefully getting to the point of self-sustaining missions, you know, on that conversation. So, you know, as opposed to being on the constant raising money kind of cycle that just takes you away from the actual mission that you're trying to do, what are some things that we could do to develop that? And so that was very successful. We got to 7 figures in recurring income in less than 12 months and started growing and scaling. And that's still going and being very successful, mostly in the South Pacific kind of region. And then kind of early 2021, another buddy of mine, we started a company called Public Square, which was at the time a values-based e-commerce platform to really help find all the businesses that shared values in America. So mostly patriotic businesses in America that, you know, were feeling like their values were maybe not so prevalent in culture at the time. And this is, you know, this is early 2021. There's a lot of kind of chaos and tension politically. And so we were trying to bring and add some value. You know, what would it look like to just bring these people together and present them to the world? And so we brought them together and it kind of just took off. You know, there was a momentum. People were emotionally attached to the vision of it. And so we went from inception to IPO in 2.5 years, which was a wild journey. Really, right. Really wild journey.
350 million too. I mean, that's wild.
No Jeez kidding. Up. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. It was amazing. We had a great, great team and most of the team is still there running it and they're doing a fantastic job. Really great, great-hearted people who just, you know, really wanted to build something that could be transformational in culture. And since then, they've done a lot of cool things. So they've got a couple wholly owned subsidiaries. They're in the buy now, pay later space now with the e-commerce and different things like that. So there's some really exciting things happening over there, which has been really cool to watch. I took an exit after the IPO because it just felt like it was time to, I needed, you know, after 2.5 years of grinding for, you know, to get to an IPO, that was amazing, but I needed a break, you know.
And things are going to change too, right?
Exactly. I mean,
now all of a sudden the company's going to start to look a bit different. So
exactly. Yeah. And I love the startup space. I love the 0 to 1 kind of timeline and building new ideas and creating that space and empowering those people to just really run and build.
That's the VC now, right?
Well, certainly. Yeah, certainly.
Sense, yeah.
So, you know, the public company stuff was just time to move on. And so anyways, we took it out and started exploring a couple of different things on what was next. And one of the things that came up was Solstrata, which is a local San Diego based company that they do 3D models of real estate assets, specifically in the utility space, to help do threat detection for substations. And so they use technology like LiDAR scanning, which is the same kind of cameras on the Google Maps or Google Earth, you know, when you drive around and you pop up and see different houses and different things. The same technology, but using that for substations, transmission lines to help with active threat security situations or to do things like vegetation management, which is a big deal in California with the fires and things like that. And so, you know, trying to impact that world, and they're doing fantastic right now.
So how did you get into that space? I mean, it's kind of like, it seems like
honestly,
it was kind of way over here somewhere.
I know. Yeah. It was a mutual friend who knew the founder and knew that we were looking for what was next. And so connected the dots, and great people, guided the teams down in Coronado. And you know, that's kind of a nice place to go.
Not
for
a
an
bad
office,
place to go to work.
Know,
yeah.
It's pretty decent. So
yeah, can get a little hectic at times, but other than that,
certainly, but you know, beautiful once you get there. And
so what was your role in the business?
So I was interim CEO, stepped into that role to help facilitate a turnaround and get things fixed up to really raise capital and set them off to run, and spent about a year there. And now they're off running and crushing it and doing a thing. And so kind of a different business model than I'd been a part of before. So, you know, a lot of discovery, a lot of learning and relationship building, things like that, which is awesome. So
you've done this several times, highly successful at it. What are the top three things? I mean, I'm sitting here going, all right, I want to be a successful founder. What would you say priority number 1, 2, and 3 are?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Besides having a great idea. We'll put that down as number one.
Okay. Yeah, great idea. That's helpful. Yeah, I think number one is like really about your team. Like you're only as good as the sum of your team. Mm-hmm. And I think teams that unify and align really quickly, because there's, you know, momentum around mission and what we're actually trying to achieve, and you know, good, hungry, humble, smart kind of mindset, like those teams will be more successful than anybody else. The quickest thing that disrupts success in companies is team dynamics, right? You know, and especially in like early stage tech companies.
Because everybody's so critical in that space.
Exactly. And there's so many out there. And right now it's so easy to build things, especially in technology with AI developing the way it's developing and no code builders. Like it's really easy to build technology now. What's not easy, which is because it's this story as old as time, is like, how do you do relationship and connection and value that really well and do that on mission going somewhere, you know?
Yes.
How does that look, you know?
Well, that's a lot of the work that I do at Jailbreak Leadership. It's really about how do you bring people together and have conversations where you can collaborate, get a clear vision and mission that everyone's buying into. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, we're going to do these things, but we know why we're doing it. And everybody's motivated to go make that happen. And everyone participated in making that happen, you know? So
exactly.
Yeah, it makes the difference for sure.
It's a huge difference. It's phenomenal, you know? And there's nothing quite like being a part of a team that's going in a direction. There's unity, there's alignment, you know, everybody's connected to the mission, they're feeling the momentum, you know, people add more value to that. You know, you probably get like at least 50% more output from people in aligned vision, aligned teams than anywhere else, which is amazing.
Totally agree with you on that. I mean, that's my whole thing, is it's about teams.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even the average person, I mean, why do you all of a sudden adopt a sports team, right? A winning team, like you want to be part of that. Oh, these guys are winning. It makes me feel good to be part of a winning scenario, right?
Exactly.
And it's just, yeah, nothing like a winning team.
Exactly. I mean, like San Diego FC at the moment, you know, following the soccer. I mean, it's pretty cool being the Galaxy, you know, that's a good time to be a soccer fan.
Padres started out pretty hot.
Kind of
a little blip in the radar at the moment, but hopefully we'll turn that around. But,
yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at any sports organization, right, you got maybe 15, 20 teams. There's only a few that make it to the top at the end, right?
Exactly.
And it's always interesting to look at the teams. It's always kumbaya when the winning teams, the losing teams, hey, we got to fire the coach. Everyone's pointing fingers at each other, right? Same thing totally. Happens in corporate America. Yeah, it looks the exactly
same,
the same.
Same thing. Same thing.
So teams number one, what's number two?
Teams number one, I think number two is the companies that I find really successful are building from demand side economics as opposed to supply side economics. Because it's really easy to build stuff now. A lot of people can have like a great idea, but it serves nobody. You got to have really, really strong demand in whatever area you are. Now, that could be anything from, I feel like my values are going away, and so I really need to purchase this thing on this app, to like our electrical infrastructure has real problems. And, you know, we're spending hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in America to try to fix aging infrastructure. And there's no solution for it. And because of that, we don't have any up-to-date economic models or visual models of, you know, how our utility grid works, you know, so that's a massive problem that somebody needs to go and solve. And so in the tech space, because it's so easy, especially to build stuff, you know, people can go out and build this, like, well, I have this idea for this, you know, like a town hall AI capturing values from people kind of thing. Well, you know, that maybe there's a need for that, but like, are millions of people going to sign up for that? Or right. is there capacity? Exactly. Yeah. Who's going to pay for that? You know, and so I think getting really deep on, does my solution actually solve a real problem that's actually painful enough for people to hire me to go and actually do something Keyword, about it?
Painful enough that people are willing to
exactly.
pay.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think part of that is, you know, understanding the buyer's journey of how people actually buy, and, you know, are they just problem aware, or are they solution aware, or are they even aware that you're solving that solution? Where do people at in the depth of that problem? You know, I think is a really critical piece of understanding that. Successful businesses are basically run on money. So are people going to pay you for right. you to solve their problem? So I think that's number two.
Yeah, I remember many years ago, I was a consultant to the NIH. And so I would come in alongside guys that girls that had maybe gotten $2 million in SBIR grants and had developed something. And so they were there to help them get to the next stage, you know, the VC, strategic buyout, whatever. And sometimes you go, okay, what is this technology we have? It's like, oh, we got this cool thing. Okay, well, what problem is it solve? Well, there's three people in North Dakota that have this disease. Like, okay, I think we have a problem here. So yeah. It's kind of cool, but there's no market, right?
Exactly.
And you can't get exactly. the, can't get the money people interested in something that doesn't have a big market.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that really is number three. You know, like, can you attract, like, successful businesses attract capital because there's momentum and traction. And so, you know, once you have demand, like, it's good that you've validated that there is a market and there's things like that, and you got a great team and all that, and that's really important. But then, you know, you actually have to demonstrate traction in order to be able to get momentum. I like to call it like win stacking. So like stack micro wins, they add up to get to bigger wins. Mm. And broaden that culture of winning inside your team happens because demand, but it also helps attract investors, which actually brings scale, you know? And so getting those kinds of things aligned actually leads to a multiplication of success. But part of that is, you know, team unity is one, demand is the other. But then like the validation and traction of that is like really critical. It's the magic formula, I think, to validate, you know, not only, you know, should somebody invest in your company, but is there dynamics at play that could actually lead to multiplication and success and driving cultural impact as across the board, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I used to do a lot of work with earlier stage companies in the medical device space up in Orange County before I moved down here. And
cool.
What we found was like the strategic buyers were later and later coming to the program, right? They wanted more and more established, you know, before they would get into the fray. And you have something you almost need to be able to go stand on your own, right?
Exactly.
Which gives you a great negotiation point.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's perfect. Thank you. That's some great insight for our folks out there who want to go build a business.
Yeah. Cool.
So talk a little bit about what you're doing currently.
Yeah, doing
some VC.
I know. Yeah.
In some circles, that's kind of like, oh, I'm not a VC.
I know.
Right next to private equity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. We see a couple of things. You know, obviously, like in venture capital, it's kind of an industry as old as time. You know, like the venture capital got started with back in the UK when they were sending ships out to go to the East Indies to go look for spices. You know, venture capitalists would write checks to underwrite the cost of the ships to send that back. And the return would be, you know, when they got back, and assuming they came back with
there was a risk associated with that back in the day.
Certainly, yeah. Assuming they came back with a boatload of spices and different precious metals and different things like that, then they would sell those and then the VC would get a percentage of the profits. You know, that's where it started. It's a
old those just wealthy guys back in the day or?
Yeah. What's crazy to think about with like inflation and all of that is that like it would cost them 250 pounds. To underwrite the cost of a ship, which, you know, today we think of, well, you know, we ate that at lunch over the weekend on Memorial Day, but you know, that's the kind of money that they were playing with back then. It's a super interesting conversation. I think like the venture capital has always been the underwriting key for growth in emerging markets and different economies of scale. And, you know, I think for us, venture capital it's an industry as a whole that really needs developed because in some senses it's dying because it's easier to build things more than ever. But in other senses, it's booming and it's still booming in Silicon Valley and New York City and Los Angeles and Austin. Like venture capital is still growing from a macro perspective. For jumping in right now, you know, we really see like the potential of culture shaping companies and investment opportunities that really drive cultural success and make society better than it has been before. Those are the companies that are starting to come out right now. Companies that are really missional and focused, have a for-profit idea, but with almost like a nonprofit kind of motivator, like tied together.
The mission is good too. Yeah,
exactly. And so, you know, there's a huge opportunity out there for equal return on investment as return on impact. And if you can bring those together, those are the companies that we're really looking for. Because my personal conviction is that those are the companies that shape culture. You know, even, you know, think 20 years ago when Facebook was starting to really get off the ground, you know, that totally shaped culture. You know, the fact that it was the first real social media platform.
Look at us now, right?
And look at us now, you know, all of that happened, you know, because some people at the end of the day, you know, they built great technology, but then venture capitalists took massive risk on getting that to scale. And look at where they are now. You know, there's massive success stories of companies that have shaped culture across our culture right now. And so we think that's really important, but there's problems in VC right now. One of the biggest problems in venture capital is liquidity for investors. And so we set out to really solve that problem at the same time as trying to solve another problem, which was inside venture capital. One of the biggest problems for founders is that the investors invest into the fund and then the fund invests into the founders and then the founders, you know, spend that money on their team. And what that really is a pressure waterfall, you know, because in traditional VC, the only way for investors to make a return is for the firm to make a return based on the founders. And so the firm is really a middleman at the end of the day, rather than like the one actually doing the work. The ones doing the work are the founders building the companies. So what we wanted to do was create a different hybrid investment model where we take the capital that we raise and place it into strategic investment vehicles that already produce fixed income returns and then use the fixed income returns from the investment to then invest in venture and start a strategic payback cycle for investors. So what that does is it solves two problems at the same time. Number one, investors get liquidity on their investment as opposed to waiting 10 years for a potential unicorn exit, number one, which is great for investors. And number two, the founders feel less pressure, fiscal pressure from us as a firm because the investors are already making that return.
Got a little longer horizon.
Exactly. And so it gives breathing room to investors and to founders to really cultivate a mission-first mindset and a mission-first model while not forgetting the fundamentals of growth and business at the same time. So trying to shift the way venture really works by kind of building a hybrid investment model.
That's interesting. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, before, I guess it was the private equity or VC were taking their percentage or whatever. So they're kind of happy, right? I got this big fund and we're managing the fund and we'll take some cuts. So that's great.
Yeah,
exactly. So even if the end investment didn't quite work out, we made out okay. So what you're doing is kind of bringing that together so that the investors are participating in that as well.
Exactly. And so trying to create a best of both worlds.
So taking really excess money is what's helping to fund the founders.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting.
Exactly. And so, you know,
are you the first or are other folks doing something similar?
You know, we haven't found anybody who's doing it exactly like we're doing it, you know, which is a benefit to us. But, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch because if it works, then I think there'll be some momentum on it where, you know.
Got IP in this sub or what?
Yeah, we're working on it. Yeah,
we're working on it. Yeah, how do you have, we own this idea.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's got potential to really shift the way venture works and operates because number one, capital is safe. and there's returns being generated from it. And number two, you know, the founders really have the breathing room. I mean, being a founder is hard work, right? You know, you've got...
So that means you have to have a pretty large fund though, to be able to just have the fund that can now spin off the money to actually do the investing you want to do.
Yeah, that's part of the puzzle for sure.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
But it gives us permission to kind of be more mission-minded inside venture capital, which is benefit.
Yeah. So that's part of the story though, right? I mean, it's exactly. Like we're doing it differently here because we want to do it differently.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what kind of investments are you looking at then? Because obviously that's important to you, right? Back to the idea, what kind of companies are we investing in?
Yeah. So we're looking at a couple of different verticals. We're looking at creator economy or companies right now. So we're looking at a couple of different social media adjacent kind of companies that are helping creators create content more effectively and efficiently and giving space for creators to kind of have more sustainability in their life. I mean, the creators are running our economy right now. I think in the future, most CEOs will be content producers more than they'll be, you know, people leaders, because it's really that face of the business that's really driving it forward is all driven by content right now. And so supporting people like that into the future is really important for us. We're also looking
at... So that's a pretty interesting statement right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, you've got a lot of influencers out there like the Gary Vaynerchuk's and, you know, a lot of these CEOs out there who are spending more of their time creating content than actually leading teams. And part of that is because, you know, marketing is so influencer driven right now. You know, we have faces of people, then they're the faces of brands as opposed to necessarily their logo, more importantly, you know. One of the good examples out there is a guy named Alex Hormozy, who he runs a company called acquisition.com. And what he's been doing is he's basically doing a private equity play. He was in gyms and different things like that. But all of his demand is created through content that he produces online. So he's across multiple channels, creating value adds for different things like that. And that's driving his success. And he's making a lot of money doing it, you know? So there's some real wins happening out there in that space. And so we really want to come alongside the creators who are empowering and the founders who are empowering the creators to build the future, which is cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, I just think of some of the YouTubes I watch, right? Totally. There's this guy, Beard Meets Food.
Okay.
I mean, I can't tell you how many of his shows I watch. This is just some British guy that comes to the US, Europe or whatever, but he's just kind of got this charismatic thing that he does. And it's like fun to sit and watch him eat an enormous amount of food. Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a kind of a crazy, like how could this guy, he's got like millions of followers. Yeah. He goes like anywhere in the world and people walk up, hey, it's Beard, you know,
it's Beard Eats Food. Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. You know, like when we spend so much time consuming content these days, oh. Right.
I'm ashamed to say, yeah. Right. Like too much time on YouTube.
I know we've all been stuck in that doom scrolling and thing, and it's not really changing, you know.
Yeah, so it's not gonna go anywhere. Yeah,
I think, you know, once you get to this much content development and with AI coming in to help create more content, we're just gonna keep consuming more and more and more content. And so, yeah.
So what's your thoughts on AI? That's obviously a big conversation, but you're a cutting edge kind of guy. So what are you thinking? Doom or gloom? Is it going to take over the world or your thoughts?
I don't really subscribe to like the doom and gloom kind of things. I mean, my perspective is that, you know, just like old technology is like has an imprint on it from whoever created it. And so AI is always going to be intrinsically human built. You know, at some point, you know, we're going to have technology that's building itself. But for right now, you know, like we're in a space where still humans building artificial intelligence, and that conscious kind of imprint on it from humanity, I think is really critical. And so my opinion is, you know, if AI can help us become more human, and help us like actually, you know, do human things a lot better than we're doing them, then
because humans don't always do a great job of being human.
Exactly.
At least we do it on the negative side.
Exactly. And so, you know, if it can create a world where we value human connection a lot more because it's, you know, it's a breath of fresh air to be human, then I think there's some potentially some wins there. You know, I'm not afraid about robotics and AI. I think, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we could learn from automating a lot of different things in our life. It gets the human brain focused on intrinsically human things. And I think that might win as a society from that.
Yeah. So this job where you're doing some tedious, repetitive kind of thing, everyone had an opportunity to start to think and create.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. What could happen?
Yeah.
You know, we could end for a new renaissance, you know, if humans actually start creating, because some of those things are taken care of.
That could be wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be really, really interesting.
Could be really,
in a really, really positive way.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So speaking of that, what do you think about in the bigger picture of what's going on in the world? We got wars going on. We got terrorists. We got lots of crazy things. As a VC, I mean, are you positive this is going to work its way out, or what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting. I think, you know, from what I can see and what I feel like, you know, I think Trump is the businessman at the end of the day. He wrote that book, Art of the Deal. I mean, that's still how he operates. It's an interesting book if you're looking for an insight on the mindset of the guy. You know, I think he has a lot of moves that he's making that, you know, and a lot of things he says that just actually help just swing the deal as opposed to it really facilitating, you know, the whole thing. And so I think it's, whether you love him or hate him, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how it shapes out. You know, I think the proof is in the pudding more than in the rhetoric.
Right.
You know, and how do we actually get to that point?
Time tells all. Seb.
It does. So I think that'll be really interesting to watch. I think for us, it's really interesting because what we're seeing is a lot of international investors wanting to come into our fund because they want to bring capital into the United States and avoid some of the tariffs. And so like for right now, like it's a really interesting.
You're almost like a side door.
Exactly.
Nice. You
know, so for us, it's a benefit to have that because we're starting to see capital come in from other parts of the world, which is helpful for our mission. So we're seeing it as kind of like a win, but you know, then there's other founders that we're looking at, you know, who were manufacturing in China or, you know, Taiwan or Vietnam or places like that. And, you know, they're holding off to wait to see
what's going
to
happen, you know, here.
A lot of them have got a lot of merchandise stuck in those countries because they're waiting to see where the tariffs will land out. You know, like a couple of weeks ago, it was like 150% or whatever it was
right.
in China.
Couldn't afford that.
Exactly. And so that's quite a interesting thing just to keep watching. I think my hope is that it'll settle down and we'll get some stability and things like that will happen soon.
Well, you definitely shook things up. That's for sure. No question about that.
Certainly.
I want to shout out to maybe talk a little bit about who your team is at Sandbox, because I met you through Chris Calvert, who's a great guy. I
great
know
guy.
Chris, I'll be seeing Chris probably this afternoon. He's in a group that I help facilitate. So look forward to seeing him. He's always sent me a couple of great guests, and as are you.
Love Chris.
So maybe talk about Sandbox from your team perspective. What do you got going there? What's that look like?
We got a really fantastic team. We've got 3 other managing partners on the fund and a small team to support them. I think there's 6 of us total on the core team, which is great. And then we have
it's a nice size.
Yeah, it is nice. It's actually really nice. Then we've got a crew of what we're calling strategic partners who are kind of like advisors and mentors and people around us who are starting to connect dots in different places and help us with scaling fund. You know, fund is a different business model to all the other stuff that I've done in the tech space. And so there's a lot of learning to do.
New adventure for you, right?
New adventure for sure. And so, you know, we're doing great, but we've got some great team. Great legal team up in New York and compliance team in New York too. So we're making our rounds, doing great things, but the team is all in California, which is nice. So
all local?
Some local, some up in the Northern Bay Area. California. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Haven't gotten seen the light yet.
Yeah, not yet, but we'll get there.
So what's the big idea here? What are you thinking that when people remember like one big thing out of this whole deal, what would that be?
You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, I think humans are our greatest resource. Like people are the greatest resource. And like when we're investing, we're not really investing in ideas. We're investing in teams. We're investing in founders. We're investing in people who have a real passion to see the mission that they have or the vision that they have come to life and really, really scale it. And, you know, I think for the holistic part of that, you know, hungry, humble, smart teams like are so successful. Even teams that don't have like the most brilliant, high IQ people, but have a really unified, connected, joined together team. Those are the ones that are really successful. Even if it's fast paced or, you know, driving the needle down the road really quickly, like the teams that really can do that well are the ones that are going to win. And so I think the big part about building business is it's a human relationship building job.
Human endeavor, yeah.
It's not really about money. It's about like, how are we building teams and culture inside those teams that really drives success and shifts culture and brings meaningful endeavors to people's lives and brings dignity at the core of business and even just a job in general. It's the core of like giving somebody dignity and owning that process and really running with it, I think is really critical for the season that we're in, you know?
How do you sort through? How do you hire?
How do I hire?
Yeah. How do you find these folks? I believe most people have this in them as part of their leadership job is to help pull that out, right? But still, hiring is a big, big factor in all this.
Yeah, it sure is.
You don't want to make that exercise too difficult. You want people willing to show up ready to kind of go, not have to like, oh, I got to double down on this one.
Yeah. You know, I think the key in hiring is like, at least for me, like there's a difference between hiring a leader and hiring, you know, just a worker type of person. But, you know, on the whole, like I like to spend a lot of time in the recruiting process, really getting to know them. Like even on remote jobs, I like to go and be with a person in person. before really bringing them on, especially as a leader. You know, I feel like those kind of dynamics are really interesting. You know, watching somebody, how they interact with a server at a restaurant, I think is really important and critical on what kind of ownership do you take? You know, are you humble in the process? Are you willing to grow and kind of yield to other people? Or are you kind of just there with a big ego trying to make your splash on the world? And, you know, I don't really hire those kind of people because I'm more interested in like who you're becoming and how you're a part of this vision or not, as opposed to, you know, just having a bunch of big name people or, you know, A-listers on a team. You know, I think that is helpful sometimes, but, you know, not if it shifts the culture. And like you're joining a culture that we're crafting when I'm hiring you. You're there to add value and also realize you're a part of a team. And so can you operate like that? You know, and can you lead like that is really what I'm looking for. And a big part of that conversation. So it's a lot of deep value sharing, like relationship building. I want to know your family. Like what's going on for you? You know, are you struggling in this area? We want to have kids over here and that's not working. Like, let's talk about that, you know, and bring that as a part of the journey of life and business. Because I think the integration of those creates a human culture that really drives success.
Boy, that's so true, right? It's like, oh, I'm on fire at work, but meanwhile, I have some disaster going on at home. Guess totally. What? Sooner or later, that's going to show up at work.
It's going
right?
to show up.
I mean, how could it not?
Exactly.
So it's really looking at the whole human. I love that idea of like spending time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only way you find out is like just spending some time and seeing how people operate.
Yeah. I mean, I've hired people before that didn't work out exactly because of that. You know, you learn sometimes from the mistakes like that. So it's hard, but it's...
I say it's always a little bit like dating at some level too, right? Like you kind of put up these blinders because I want to fill the spot, right? And Seb seems like a great guy. And so far he's checking all these boxes. He's got that twitch.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a big deal, right? Did anyone else notice the twitch?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see the twitch.
Exactly.
And sure enough, that twitch becomes a big thing, you know, later in life.
Exactly. Yeah.
I had one of my guests in here. She said, I always walk my potential employee out to their car. I like to see their car. It doesn't matter what they're driving. It's like, how are they maintaining their car, right? They'll say a lot about how they're going to maintain my shop. So
yeah, I love that.
Definitely does. Well, Seb, we got to wrap this thing up. I really appreciate you coming in here today.
Oh yeah.
It's a great story. I love what you're doing. I'm a big believer. That's part of what this whole podcast is about is, you know, leading beyond profits, but how do we bring meaning to work and having the right culture and the right leadership? I mean, that's just critical. So appreciate what you're doing. It's a good story. Thanks to Chris for connecting us here.
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing some great stories from you. You're part of the family now, so we get to be connected in here with all the Conscious Curiosity leaders.
Amazing.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we all counting on you.